Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this very cold January 29th morning. I woke up at like 3:40, just making a unscheduled trip to the... never mind. You guys know what I'm talking about. So at any rate, I decided to check and see what the temperature was, and it was minus 11 at 3:40 in the morning. It's like, holy cow. You know, everywhere around the country, gosh, they're talking about big snowstorms. It's like, it's winter out. It's cold out. I like it cold. I like it wintry. I got out and did snow plowing this week. I just had a lot of fun. I actually got my old 1949 Farmall Cub fitted with a blade so I can plow with that too. And that was a lot of fun. Normally I use a modern tractor, but it was fun to get out there with the old one. Let's see. And speaking of winter time, and let's talk about gun shows. We've got the annual Cabin Fever Gun Show in Escanaba, the Delta County Commerce Center. So you got to go all the way up to the UP, but that sounds like a cool thing. The annual Cabin Fever Gun and Knife Show. We also have the Manistee Gun and Knife Show at the Little River Casino. And I always think that is a cool idea to have a gun show and have be at a casino. So you can go see if you can make money. And if you make some money, spend it on guns. If you don't make money, you can, maybe you can at least console yourself by buying some guns anyway. Let's see, the Michigan Antique Arms Collector Show. This is at the Suburban Collection in Novi. And the Bay City Gun Show at the DoubleTree Hotel in Bay City, Michigan. So we got Ohio's got a bunch. The Dillonvale Sports Expo at the Homestead Event Center. The Shelby County Gun and Knife Show. The Smithsville Gun Show. The Miami Town Gun Show in Whitewater Township at the Miami Town Elementary School campus. What a great country we live in, where you can have a gun show at an elementary school campus, okay? And then the Dayton Gun Show, Montgomery County Event Center, Dayton, Ohio. So we got some in, for you guys out in Missouri, we got the Warsaw Gun and Knife Show, the Farmington Gun and Knife Show, the Hallsville Gun Show, and the Table Rock. That sounds like cool. At the New Testament Christian Church, Table Rock Gun Show, and none in New York, so... numbers haven't changed, but they will before next week. We're still at 767,231 licensed CPL holders, active licensed CPL holders, okay? Okay, so there's a question that we had last week, and somebody asked about this. And I want to say there's a lot of... different feelings about things like hollow points and jacketed soft points and all sorts of different guns. And there was a question, gee, how long have they been using those? Okay. So what we've got is, now this is, you know, sometimes it's like, who was the first guy that invented this? This could have happened in a couple of places, but it was pretty much assumed, it's believed, that it was in the late 19th century. So in the late 1800s, and it is believed that jacketed hollow point ammunition was invented in India during the late 19th century at the Dum Dum Arsenal. Okay, now I always, when people called Dum Dum bullets, okay, I always thought, you know, that shows how you can, you know, it's like when you sing a song and you've been you've been singing the wrong lyrics for, now there's whole videos made of this. There was a comedian I watched the other day, and his whole shtick was he was playing songs and and singing these weird lyrics, and he goes, this is what I always thought it sounded like. And he'd say it, and then he'd play the song, and you go, oh, my God, it sounds just like it. So you understand why that happened. Well, I always believed that when they said dum-dum bullets, that it was essentially like somebody took a regular soft point or even hard cast, but a lead bullet and put a cross on it to make it, you know, expand or separate or something like that. And now I want to thank the listener for asking the question, because now I actually understand that it was at the Dum Dum Arsenal in India in the late 1800s, the 19th century. A British captain developed a full metal jacket round with the jacket cut away to expose the nose. Interesting. Okay. And that exposed the lead core. So that turned it kind of into like a semi-jacketed soft point, let's say. So anyway, the other thing that people thought is that the first hollow point bullets were marketed in the late 19th century also as express bullets. They were hollowed out to reduce the bullet's mass and provide higher velocities. So you all know that, how when you are, especially, I want to say when you're shooting handguns, you don't necessarily think about the velocities that much. Oh, yeah, they might be, a 45 might be in the 800 to 900 feet per second, a 38 would be in about the 700 to 850 feet per second. Let's say the 9mm might be in the 1200 to 1300. You might have, and it depends, though, on the weight of the bullet. Well, you really notice that in rifles, okay? So, like, for example, I was loading up some 7mm Remington Magnum, and I've got 162 grain ELDXs. They're these extra low drag expansion bullets. But I've also got some bags and bags of some 7mm Remington or 7mm projectiles that I got. Did a swap with my buddy John for some primers, okay? So at any rate, I've got 7mm projectiles ranging from 120 grains to 165 or 170 grains. So what happens is you might have something that fires at 29, or let's say it's got a 30-06 or something, and it is got a 180 grain bullet in it that does about 2700 feet per second. If you put a 150 grain bullet in it, it might do 2900 feet per second. And if you shoot one of these lighter bullets, 140 or even 120 grain bullet, you might get up to 3100 or 3200 feet per second. So I can see where people thought back then, well, let's hollow out the bullet to make the bullet's mass lighter and provide higher velocities. And the higher velocities may give you a better trajectory. They probably didn't even think about the ballistics of it very much. The bullets were kind of round-nosed then, and in reality, round-nosed, flat-nosed and stuff, unless you get, you know, the spire point or spitzer point bullets that are very pointed, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference from the velocity standpoint. Now, it does when you get into the extra low drag ones that are really long and have boat-tailed ends on them. Boat-tail means at the rear end of the projectile, it angles in and it's a smaller diameter. And what that does is it actually helps with the induced drag of the bullet. So you're getting into real aerodynamics when you get into that. So then some other things. People go, well, what is the purpose of a jacketed hollow point bullet? And now that you are assuming that, oh, gosh, we've got them for self-defense and stuff like that, but the purpose originally for it was to increase the effectiveness of the bullet and decrease the chance of over-penetration. Especially in handguns, okay? So let's stop and think about somebody who is, And this is probably why, sometimes when there are gang fights and things like that, and guys are out there shooting their 9mm, and they're probably, many times they're shooting full metal jacket round those bullets, okay? And those bullets tend to make little holes through people, okay? They push aside tissue, and maybe, depending on how you hit, it may push aside vital things a little bit, and it may have some good amounts of hydraulic shock, but it makes a hole completely through it, just like a full metal jacket would do that with something you're hunting. Okay, it would go make a small hole through whatever you're shooting at. Okay, so when it was with police, matter of fact, people ask, when did hollow points become popular? Well, when they really became popular, law enforcement in many jurisdictions began adopting hollow point rounds in the 70s because of the reduced risk of overpenetration. When a bullet passes through the intended target and strikes another person or object, which is common in that type of ammunition. So let's say if you had, and at that time in the 70s, it would have mostly been revolvers. So let's say you had 38s or 357 magnums, and or maybe somebody carried a 45 or something like that, but not as much into the 9mm in the 70s. Okay, there were some, but not the model 39 Smith and 59 Smith and stuff like that. But the thing is that if you were firing with a 357 magnum, a high velocity round, okay, and you had a full metal jacket bullet, then you would make just a nice little hole through something, and it would go on through walls or other people or car doors or whatever. And so the idea of a jacketed hollow point was for it to flatten, to deform and flatten easily in the human body such that it expends the energy in the body. Now, I have talked about this before. I know I have a lot of new listeners. When you've talked about these things for 10 years, I may be repeating myself to some of you longtime listeners. But think of this. If you were a law enforcement officer or had a self-defense shooting, and you fire and it goes through the bad guy, okay, and keeps going, A, that's a danger to people around you. Sometimes when you see down in Detroit or Chicago, when there's a drive-by shooting and somebody gets shot, a little kid in a front, living room of a home, because the rounds went through the person or missed the person, but went through and still had a lot of energy. So you're wasting that energy. It makes a hole through you, but it still has a lot of energy left, and it goes through other potential things. However, if you have a jacketed hollow point, and most of these things have anywhere from 11 to 16 inches of penetration, they will stop in a human body, okay? And so that full amount of energy is dissipated in that body. And the point is that you didn't waste the energy and produce a dangerous projectile that's going somewhere else. It could be ricocheting off the ground. It could be going through the neighbor's house wall. Do you remember there's I'm following another rabbit hole, but there's a thing I talked about before called the Box O' Truth, okay? You can look this up online, Box O' Truth. And what it is that it's somebody who made a box that has layers of sheetrock in it, okay? That's wallboard, drywall, okay? And they spaced them about 3 inches apart, and it's like a 2-foot-long box, and they'll have, 5 or 6 or 8 or 12 layers of drywall in it. And they'll have somebody shoot, and it'll go through. I want to say even a 22 will go through 4 or 5, and these higher power rounds will go through 8 or 10 layers of sheetrock unless they hit a stud or a pipe or something like that. So So what you're trying to do is prevent collateral damage, things where it might go through and hit somebody in the next room, the next apartment, whatever the case may be. And the point is that what you have to think about, the other thing is the energy. If you just make a small hole in somebody, that person is not as likely to stop what they're doing, okay? Because when you fire, you are shooting to stop a threat, okay? A guy's coming at you with a gun or a knife or something like that, and you're not shooting to kill, okay? Because that's that's between that person and God, okay? And the EMS technician, okay? But the point is that you are shooting to stop the threat, okay? So when that person is coming at you, why do you think sometimes, and there have been cases and videos of this, where somebody gets shot 8, 10, 11, 15 times and they're still coming at the guy? Because they didn't hit anything vital and it didn't transfer all that energy to them. Okay, so that's why you use jacketed hollow point rounds. That's why, Tom from Northfield Township has spent hours and weeks, and then I work with him on this, and we do these ballistics tests, and they're on TriggerTalkRadio.com, my website. On the right-hand side of the page, you hit ballistic tests, and you're able to see which ones are most effective. So at any rate, that was an interesting question when somebody asked me about hollow points. Then you got to ask yourself, well, does the U.S. military use? And actually, are hollow points banned in war? And they are, in many cases, from an 1899 Hague Convention. Okay, which specifically prohibits the use of bullets which expand or flatten easily in the human body, such as bullets with a hard envelope which does not entirely cover the core or is pierced with incision. So now I got to say, now if you think that the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or any of these places really care very much about, oh, well, we can't use a hollow point because that's against the Hague Convention. No. Okay, so the question then becomes, does the U.S. military use hollow points? And the U.S. military have been authorized to use hollow points on bases since 2010. Okay, so that's military police. Because actually what happens is, it allows the even the Hague Convention and the military protocols, it allows the use of hollow points for self-defense, for policing and stuff against U.S. citizens or against U.S. military or bad guys that are attacking the U.S. military in the United States, like when they attack somebody at a base or something like that. They do not use it. They continue to use full metal jacket rounds in warfare type of situations, okay? They did, and by the way, they designed the new M18, M17 and M18, the Sig Sauer 320, to use Winchester Olin XM1153 special purpose cartridges, which are hollow points, okay? Now, are hollow points legal for civilian use? Yes, everywhere in the U.S., with one exception. The state of New Jersey bans civilians from possessing hollow point ammo unless they're at home or hunting. A lot of people always say, oh, yeah, well, New Jersey bans you from having hollow points. Well, you can have hollow points. You can have them at home. You can have them in your nightstand or safe gun, your self-defense gun. Or you can have hollow points in your hunting rifle, okay? But you can't if you're carrying. And by the way, almost nobody can carry there. We've got Jim from Chelsea on ammo. Hi, Jim. How are you?
How are you doing, Dick? I'm doing okay.
Good, good. What's up today?
Well, you're talking about bullets and a different jacketed hollow points, blah, blah, blah. And I'm wondering if for the police, it wouldn't be far better to have a frangible bullet.
I want to say, and frangible bullets are, and for anybody who doesn't know that term, frangible tend to be ones that are like sintered, sintered aluminum, sintered resin, and copper, sintered copper, which means that they fracture, they come apart. And actually, they were used and used to be used, and I think they still are, by air marshals and stuff in aircraft to prevent. The idea is that if you're shooting and it hits the wall of the aircraft, that it will not go through the aluminum and won't depressurize the aircraft, et cetera, okay? But the one thing about that, and sintered, and there are some interesting ones. The Ruger ARX rounds, are you familiar with those, Jim?
No, I'm not. The only reason I'm familiar with them is a shooting range required us to use them.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing that mainly to protect their equipment, because a sintered frangible round, typically when what happens is when people are not shooting well-controlled at a firing range, sometimes they hit the equipment, they hit the ceiling, they hit other things, and they're trying to protect their equipment at the range. Okay, from doing damage to it. My concern with it, with a law enforcement usage, would be a number of things. First of all, the idea, sometimes officers have to stop somebody in a vehicle, and a frangible round would likely not penetrate and would shatter on the door skins or a windshield or a laminated glass window. And so it might prevent them from doing their duty that they need to do, especially if they're trying to protect people and themselves from somebody trying to run them down or whatever. The other thing is that ammunition can indeed sometimes, I want to say, even jacketed hollow points and stuff, this time of year when it's so cold out, people are wearing lots of coats and leather jackets and things like that, it can actually fill the hollow point portion, and then it turns it into more of a, like a full metal jacket. It doesn't expand. I don't think frangible ammo is a good idea for most law enforcement officers, and I do believe that well-trained ones are very careful with shot placement and stuff like that, although you do hear about the ones where, you know, somebody shoots 18 rounds and only hits the guy three times or something like that. But for the most part, I believe that they should be using the jacketed hollow points. A difference from that, and this is an interesting one, is that some jurisdictions prevented and wrote laws that said that their law enforcement could not use jacketed hollow points. So a company called Federal came up with a thing that they called an expandable full metal jacket. Now imagine what this is the end of the projectile. It looks like a normal full metal jacket round, but the end of the projectile has like a silicone pellet in it, and so when it hits something or somebody, it squashes flat and it like turns into like flower petals. It's very interesting, and it's an interesting way to get the effect of a jacketed hollow point, the idea to reduce over penetration versus full metal jacket, which will go through straight through. Now, I started to say the Ruger ARX is a round that is made for, and there's some other companies that make a similar round that are all copper, but the thing is that they are a sintered copper and plastic resin, and it's almost like it looks like a screwdriver bit, and it makes a like a drill bit kind of, and it creates quite a bit of hydraulic shock in the body. So, at any rate, I hope that answers your question, Jim.
Yeah, and I'd wish the police department, and I'm all for the cops.
Yeah, hold on with that. But we're losing the music's playing. I got to take a break. Hold on, we'll talk to you when we get back. Thanks. Bye.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And gosh, that was a rookie mistake. I've got so caught up in talking about and talking to Jim and talking about these hollow point, jacketed hollow points versus dum-dum bullets and the history and stuff. I've got a clock right in front of me that tells me to the second when the music's going to start. And then Derek holds up his fingers and it's like, oh, crap. And I ran out of time. So, Jim, if you wanted to make a point, you were talking about supporting law enforcement. And so if you want to call back, you're welcome to. Or if I answered your questions well enough, then that's fine. Gosh. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of history about bullet design, and it went from I actually looking at a picture right here of dum-dum bullets, and it turns out it was from, and I got a kick because if you look it up, some people might say, well, D-U-M-B, D-U-M-B, but no, it's D-U-M, D-U-M arsenal. So at any rate, interesting bit of history, and that's one of the things about the gun culture. Let's say there's so much that you can do and check and look up and go down a rabbit hole, and so you just end up with time wasters. Okay, yes, my wife might go, well, what are you looking at now? Why are you looking up 1899 bullet design when it is over 120 years later and stuff like that? We've got, Tom from Detroit on Frangible Ammo. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I got some 223 caliber frangible bullets. And I don't know if you've ever seen these before. They're made out of powdered metal.
Yeah.
They're 55 grain and they're real long. They won't stabilize in a 1-9 twist barrel. At least I couldn't get them to shoot right. They're real accurate in the 1-7 16-inch barrel.
Yeah.
The thing was. Yeah, I was shooting them out of the 1-9 with a stainless steel barrel, and my accuracy went all the heck after that with the jacketed bullets.
Really?
And yeah, I looked down the barrel with my optivisor and flashlight.
Right.
And it looked like it really put a lot of wear on the barrel. I had to shoot about, I'd say, another 50 rounds or so of, regular jacketed bullets. And now the rifle's shooting real good again. It's an MOA rifle, so,
Yeah, I could see that it, and that's an interesting question about some of the, like the Ruger ARX rounds that are like a resin and a sintered copper or a resin slurry. They're made with copper powder and resin. And you wonder if that would make more deposits on the rifling.
Well, I think that actually the powdered metal is abrasive, and it actually took metal off the inside of the barrel. Now, they might be great for breaking in a barrel. I'm wondering if I got another 1-7 twist barrel. It's nitride. I know nitride is what? That's up about 70 Rockwell.
Yeah, it's pretty hard, so.
I know it's real hard. I'm wondering if it's good. All right, I got about 500.
That's an interesting.
We got them real cheap. So
Well, no wonder, because they eat people's barrels up, right?
I saw they're real expensive. I don't know how we got the. I think we paid 5 cents a piece for them.
Holy cow, that's cheap.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess it's just something, just a question of whether that nitride barrel. I guess I should call the place I got the barrel from. Maybe they know something.
Well, who made the rounds?
I don't recall, but just looking at them, they're powdered metal. Like I said, they're real accurate. They're real long, kind of skinny for a 55 grain.
Interesting. Well, they probably, the sectional density of it may be greater than normal
I shot them at metal plates, and they got quite a bit of penetration. They maybe 75-80% of the the gouge out of a steel plate, not hardened, that a 55 grain full metal jacket would do. But
so I don't know if those are true frangibles. Then they might just be somebody's attempt at a different material than lead than jacketed lead.
Well, it's that, and I think what happens is instead of ricocheting, they just revert back to powder. They are. I don't think they're a true frangible. On a soft target, I think they're going to go right through.
Yeah.
The other thing was about you're talking about the rules of land warfare, and I actually got the FM, field manual, Army field manual on that. And there they said, that any hollow point or putting the X on the bullet, it said to make it deform more or cause more damage.
Right.
I'm just going from memory, but that was the problem. Then I had heard somebody had said that the snipers, military snipers, were allowed to use the Sierra Match King hollow points because they weren't to increase the damage. They were just for accuracy.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to say it seems kind of odd to me that you would have and this was from the Hague Convention back in 1899, that you would be worried about, we want you to shoot them, but not hurt them too bad. You know what I mean? It's like the rules of war, I understand, when it comes to chivalry kind of things, but the design of the projectile seems kind of odd. So, hey, Tom, I'm going to have to go. Jim's calling back. I wanted to get his comments here. Okay, thanks, Tom. Yep, bye. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, good. I got, before I make my point, do you remember back when they were coating bullets? It was a blue material. I can't remember the name. Maybe you can.
Well, there were some blue coated ones that were a plastic coat or whatever. Also, there were some black ones that they called black talons that were coated with certain materials and stuff like that. But what's your point on the coated bullets?
Well, those coated bullets, they found out. A couple of reputable magazines did research on it, and they found out that they're causing microfractures in the barrel. So I don't know, what the other gentleman was talking about. May be a wise idea not to get into coating with materials that you're not familiar with.
I do know that there are, like I said, there are rounds that have a nylon coat. They're name brand rounds these days. They are, and they are blue and red and stuff like that. That probably is more of a polymer and doesn't hurt something. And I want to say Tom from Detroit was talking about maybe for breaking in a barrel. There are actually rounds made and materials made that you put on the projectile. And the idea is that it essentially polishes the barrel when you get a new gun. You know what I mean? For breaking it in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this blue material, I think, was more a chemical. You actually painted it on the bullets.
Really?
And it was a chemical treatment, so it wasn't a nylon or anything like that.
Okay.
It was the chemical itself that was doing microfracturing.
I'm going to look into that. So that's interesting. Right. Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks for the comments. I appreciate it.
Wait. One last thing was, we're talking, getting back to the frangibles. I think the police departments, God bless them, but they can't be going into a department store with AR-15s, 223s, standard 223s, because I'm sure you remember the story of the little girl that was killed in the changing booth because the bullet went through the guy and killed her.
Well, that was a recent story. Yeah, you always have to remember, and this is whether you are a civilian doing a self-defense shoot or you're a law enforcement officer or military, when you shoot a bullet, you're responsible for where that round is going to go. And that is true. Matter of fact, I have a story today that, if I get to it, that is about people shooting at like New Year's Eve and stuff like that, where they shoot in the air and stuff. And you are always responsible for where that round is going, whether you are shooting at a bad guy and there's a little girl in a changing room behind or whatever. So I agree. I want to say, and I don't recall if that guy had a gun or if it was a cell phone that looked like a gun or whatever to the people. But the point is that law enforcement has, and they trained for this, to make a split-second decision. And it's always easy afterwards to sit there and go, well, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? And then there's actually some training out there for people that I know people who did it. I never got the opportunity to do it, but it's like a video thing that sets up with a gun that shoots lasers and stuff, and you have to make those split-second decisions. Do I shoot or don't I shoot? And so that's one of the things where if you are equipped with a firearm that has a projectile that will not go through somebody, that helps with the decision. But I don't know that it actually went through the guy. It may have just missed the guy and gone through. Because, you know, this is just like when I mentioned that box of truth of shooting through drywall and things like that. You know, I always get a kick when I'm watching an old cowboy movie or something like that, and the people are in the old ranch house and they break out the window and they're shooting through there, you know, they pop up and they're shooting at the bad guy, and then they go down behind, and you know, it's like, just shoot them through the wall, okay, because it's going to go through the wall, okay. Just like was it on Band of Brothers or Saving Private Ryan or something like that, where a guy was coming up the stairs and it just shot him through the wall. And so that's the thing is that there's a big difference between concealment and cover. Cover actually provides you with, you know, like an old refrigerator, a metal refrigerator or something like that. If you're behind it, it would give you cover. Concealment is behind one of the new modern ones that's all plastic and it'll just go through the wall. You know what I mean? So at any rate, well, I'm going to move on. I've got another call here. So thanks, Jim. Thanks for the calls today.
All right.
Yep.
See
bye-bye.
You later, bud.
Yeah, bye. We've got John from Saline on Frangible Ammo. Hi, John.
Hi, Dick. How are you today, sir?
I'm fine. What's up?
Great. Hey, this kind of touches back on our previous conversation, but I carry a government 1911, and I use Liberty ammunition. It's called Civil Defense.
Okay.
It is it's 45 ACP plus B, 78 grains at 1,900 feet per second.
Very light round. Is it frangible, too?
Yes, it's a starburst fragmentation.
Okay.
That's what it is. So,
yeah, because that's...
But then it also has a disc at the base of it, so after it fragments, that disc punches through too, but I carry it, and it's it makes the gun significantly lighter to carry, but it also has a 12-inch penetration at 10 feet.
Well, so, that is an interesting round. I might have to look into that. Maybe that's a round that Tom from Northfield Township and I will have to test, huh?
It could be, yep. And coincidentally, I also keep that in my Beretta Storm.
Ah, okay. You're
I'm not punching through too many walls anyway.
That's through your CX4?
Yep.
That's cool. Well, I got to say, you know, and the other thing is, at 78 grains, that's only a third of the weight of a normal round.
You notice it in the mag. I mean, question that the mag's actually in there sometimes.
It would be very light. It would make the gun significantly lighter. And I'll
so
bet
They're forged copper is what it is.
Interesting.
And then it's plated.
Well, and which it's hold on a second. Okay, it's Liberty rounds.
We got Liberty ammunition.
Okay.
And it's civil defense, lead free. So it's forged copper.
Yeah.
Which is another added bonus if that bugs you.
Well, I don't worry about that a whole lot.
Me neither. It's John from Sling Trap Team, so I'm around lead a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Oh, I know.
Anyway,
that's...
But it's 1,900 feet per second, 2-inch dispersion at 25 meters.
Pretty
cool. 12-inch penetration at 10 feet.
Really neat. Neat. Yep. Thanks for the tip. And we may have to get some of that. Tom from Northfield Township and I may need to test
check
some of that out. Okay. And matter of fact, there are some other ones that we've done that are these RIP rounds and other things like that that are, I want to say they tend to be gimmicky. You know what I mean? But that one sounds pretty good. So
It's fast. Yeah. Very fast.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the rest of it. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Gosh, see, we talked almost the whole first hour here on ammunition like that. What a great thing. Let's see. Now this is something I'll finish up this hour with. Broadening the base. 30% of the firearm sales in 2021 went to 5.4 million new gun owners. Okay. Now, do you remember before we had like 18 million gun owners or something? I mean, no, 8 million in 2020. Now we got 5.4 million more new gun owners. And it's pretty interesting. They actually, nearly 47% of first-time gun buyers in 21 inquired about training and 43% signed up for training. I've got a thing. Let's see here. This was a questionnaire that they did with the dealers. There were more than 5.4 million first-time gun owners. In your opinion, what percentage of your 2021 customers were first-time gun owners? 29.6%. Okay. Provide your best estimate as to what percentage of the first-time gun owners have purchased an additional firearm since their initial purchase. 22.8%. So first-timers went out and got, maybe they got a self-defense gun. And then they said, well, you know, this is fun. I think I want to get a gun to go target shooting with. I'm going to get a .22 Mark IV target or something like that. Let's see. First-time gun buyers, the average percentage by age group, okay, 22.2% were under 30. 27% were 31 to 40. 21.7% were 41 to 50, and 13.8% were 51 to 60, and 8.1% were 61 or greater. Well, that's probably because the older guys that were interested in buying guns, they already bought guns. That's why there's a smaller group of first-time gun owners like in my group, okay? But it's interesting that all these 30 under 31 to 50, okay? That's like 50% of them were 31 to 50. That is pretty good. Now, by the way, let's see. What would you estimate the average number of firearms person purchased, of the firearms per person purchased by your first-time gun buyers? So 1.6. So some people went out and got, you know, they bought two to start out with. They're first-time gun owners, and they bought two. But 1.6 firearms per person. What percentage of your 2021 first-time gun buyers would you estimate inquired about professional firearms training? 46.8%. I would like to see that higher, because if you're a first-time gun owner and your only experience has been, well, it might be that you've gone out with friends and they've interested you enough, but you still should get some training, okay? And what percentage signed up for training? 43%. Now, this is an interesting one, too. In your opinion, what percentage of your 2021 first-time gun buyers were female? 33.2%. So a third of the gun buyers were, you know, that's almost, because pretty much we're split 50-50 in this population, right, for male and female. So they're catching up. Okay, good, good. Let's see. Did you see an increase or decrease in any specific demographic? Let's see. And it said, retails noticed no change in customer demographics. So about 60% said, nope, exactly the same. So it's kind of interesting. Let's see, 18% of the retailers saw an increase in Native American purchasers. 27% saw an increase in Asian American. 44% of the retailers saw an increase in African American purchasers. 40% saw an increase in Hispanic Americans, okay? And 14% saw an increase of Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders, which are some of the interesting numbers that, you know, we always ask ourselves, why are they asking these questions? Well, actually, it's interesting. I have an article I'll get to in the second hour where the anti-gun people out there are not happy at all. They liked the fact that they could go, oh, it's just old white guys buying all these guns. Well, now they're seeing that there is a huge increase in the diversity of people buying guns. Men, women, blacks, whites, Asians, Indians, whatever, okay? Do you know what? They don't like that, because that means it's becoming more mainstream. Oh my goodness. We like to divide our Americans and go, it's all just these old white guys, these white racists out there that are buying all these guns. Well, how are you going to claim that when 44% of the people are seeing a huge increase in African Americans purchasing them? I think that's an interesting set of statistics. Let's see. New York Mayor Eric Adams blames the rise in violence on America's fixation with guns. Really? Do you think that I would be willing to bet you that anybody who listens to a gun show like my show, Trigger Talk Radio, or like Tom Gresham's Gun Talk, or there's got to be other ones around. I don't know how many others. There are people that watch videos like Hickok 45 and stuff like that. I would be willing to bet that the people that watch those and that listen to shows like mine are not the ones doing the violence. Okay? So we may have a fixation on guns because we like them, because we enjoy them, because they provide us with a hobby, and they also provide us with self-defense if we should need it. But it's not that fixation that is causing the increased violence in Chicago or New York. There's another societal reason for that. Okay? I got to say, you know, if they're out there talking, he's coming up with a blueprint to reduce gun violence in New York. And all of these things turn into things like, oh, well, we need to have social workers. By the way, there was a social worker that was shot in Chicago or something this past week who I think went to talk to somebody about a domestic dispute, okay, and ended up getting shot. Okay, that's one of the reasons that you cannot replace your law enforcement agencies with social workers and all sorts of Duke counselors and things like that, because the culture that is causing the violence, the lawlessness, the shoplifting, the riots in the streets and things like that, that's what's causing it, not the fixation on guns by good people that are just hobbyists and enjoy it and use for self-defense. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be back with the second hour in just a few minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And we are back with the second hour of Trigger Talk Radio for this day of January 29th, very cold January 29th. And let's see, we have, I was talking about New York, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to ask Derek, what is on the table for your show tomorrow?
It's going to be one of two topics. Either it depends on if the Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team defeats Michigan State today. I'll be discussing Michigan basketball. And if Michigan State ends up winning, then my discussion will be celebrating the 75th birthday of Baseball Hall of Famer Nolan Ryan.
Well, that's kind of neat. Although I got to say, you can't. Maybe you should talk about Michigan if they lose. That would be.
Well, yeah, I could, but as of right now, on ESPN.com, they're projected to not make the NCAA tournament as of right now. So it would be kind of tough to motivate U of M basketball fans based on that fact.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, speaking of motivating fans, I have got to say, I am one of the – now, this is Trigger Talk. This is not football talk, okay? But I got to say, I am delighted to see Matthew Stafford doing a good job at the Los Angeles Rams. So if you want to comment on that today out there, listeners, fine. But what's your take on that, Derek?
Well, I'm happy for Matt Stafford and the success he's had with the L.A. Rams. It just wasn't going to happen here with the Detroit Lions. Unfortunately, they've been under a huge curse since the late 1950s, the so-called curse of Bobby Lane, the Lions legend who was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers and apparently said, "You'll never win another championship for over 50 years." And here we are, 65 years later, still no championship. So it could very well be that curse still living on.
Boy, they're going to have to do an exorcism or something, or maybe they should meet with his family and get a blessing or something.
Yeah, I think definitely the Lions should look for any relatives of Bobby Lane and do some good work in the community. I think that would get rid of some of the demons.
Well, that'll be a fun show. I'll have to listen to that tomorrow. So okay, and watch the. I'm going to watch L.A. And of course, it was interesting to see Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady both be on the losing side this last weekend. Don't you think?
Yeah, that was quite interesting. I was certainly hoping that Tom Brady and the Buccaneers would win because Brady being a former University of Michigan quarterback. And now I was reading this morning, it's not official yet, but it looks like Tom Brady is going to announce his retirement within the next week. So that's unfortunate.
Oh, really? How about that? Well, he might go in and out of retirement. Depends on if he gets tired of hanging around with his supermodel wife or something like that. He may have to go back to work, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he does have some business ventures. I've heard of one just during this last U of M football season that Cade McNamara, the Wolverines quarterback, signed up for some fashion apparel line that Tom Brady is starting up.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So back to Trigger Talk here, guys. Okay, enough of the sports talk, because you can listen to Sports Talk on Wham tomorrow at 12:30. That's when Derek will have his show, right? The Stone Cold Sports Truth.
That's right.
Very good. So New York mayor, who is a former cop, okay, and this is the story I was talking about just at the end of the first hour. New York City Mayor Eric Adams blamed the increase in crime in January on America's fixation with guns in an interview on Sunday. "Our fixation with guns in our country is destroying our children," Adams told ABC's New York's Bill Ritter when asked about the recent surge in violent crime. "And when you look at this, I say over and over again, we have a sea of violence in our city and country. There are many rivers that are feeding the sea, and we must dam each one." Adams went on to discuss his blueprint for solving the issue of gun violence. "I didn't talk about that. I didn't talk about one place. I did a holistic approach to the state. This is what we must do on every level of government. Let's sit down and engage in a conversation of how to accomplish that." Ritter pointed out, that Adams' blueprint would focus on 30% of New York's precincts that account for 80% of the violence in the city. Huh. Well, I would think that it would be all across. If it was just America's fixation on guns, it'd be all across the city. You telling me that 30% of New York's precincts that account for 80% of the violence, they're just the ones fixated on guns? That's where the gun nuts live? Is that where they have the gun shows when they have, they don't have them very often in New York, but maybe that's where the gun shows are. I don't know. Ritter asked how this would affect minorities, whom he described as both the disproportionate victims and perpetrators of the crime. Adams responded by noting that his blueprint would focus on supporting the on-the-ground crisis management teams by linking them with every agency in New York City to focus on the issue of gun violence. "As we tell our gang members to get out of the gangs, we also are going to give them job opportunities. If the Department of Sanitation needs to pick up trash because someone is hiding drugs and guns in a location, my crisis management team would be able to call the agency and get stuff done." No. Okay? This isn't going to fix it. This is like calling in the counselors and the social workers and stuff like that. What you've got to do is get tough on these guys that are, you know, they actually know how to do it. Law enforcement knows how to do it. He knows how to do it. Mayor Adams knows how to do it, but he cannot say how to do it because now he is a Democratic mayor and he's got to feed all the all of the woke people out there. And so you've got to go after the gun owners, that not the legal gun owners, not the ones that sell them on the street or by robbing them and burglarizing homes and getting guns and stuff like that. No, we have to go after the legal gun owners. That'll fix it. Yeah. Let's see. This makes me laugh. AR-15 designed for kids is triggering gun control crowd. Now, I want to say this. So somebody, the company came out, it's called a Wee One Tactical, okay? JR-15, not an AR-15, a JR for Junior 15. And it's about 20% smaller than a standard AR. It's in .22 caliber, okay? It weighs just under 2.5 pounds. It's called a Wee One Tactical. And I want to say, one of the things that is important in teaching youngsters to shoot and teaching them gun safety is having a properly sized gun. Now, I want to say, you know, this is a .22 caliber. Now there are actually, I think Theron's got one. It's really cool. It's a Smith and Wesson AR-22. I forget, but it looks like a normal AR-15, but it's got a lot of polymer in it and stuff, more so than a normal one. But it is a .22 caliber AR-15, and it's a hoot to shoot, and it's great for teaching people. And by the way, and that's a full-sized one. Okay, now this one's 20% smaller, but just like the normal ones, it has an adjustable stock and things like that, because it's important to size the gun for the person you're trying to teach. We've all seen, hopefully this didn't happen to you, but I can remember the first time I tried to fire my grandpa's double-barrel shotgun or his Browning A5, I was a kid holding that baby out. You know what I'm talking about? The length of pull on the stock was too long. You're holding that out, and it's like, oh, my gosh. No, that's not a safe way to learn. You should learn on a gun that's sized correctly for you. And for years, they have been making youth guns, okay? I have some youth guns that are that have collapsible stocks. I have ones that are just sized smaller. A Marlin, YT-15, I think it is. And it's a bolt-action single shot, and it's sized for a small person, okay? And they've been making youth stocks for Ruger 10/22s and other Marlins and stuff like that for years. But no, now the gun control community is triggered because, oh my goodness, this looks like a evil assault rifle. You're teaching kids to shoot with an evil assault rifle. Well, no, it's a modern sporting rifle, okay? And it has the exact same function as that 10/22. It's got a removable magazine. It's semi-automatic. But it looks, it's an evil black rifle. That's no good. Well, I got to say, teaching youngsters, this ought to be brought back into schools, teaching them gun safety, teaching them, and by the way, if they never can do it in a school, well, then it's up to us as parents and grandparents and instructors and sports people that, you know, like people that enjoy the shooting sports, men and women, take your kids out and teach them gun safety. Teach them about not pointing at anything that you don't intend to shoot, that guns are always loaded, you know, that you treat them as if they're always loaded. Even if you think they're not, you don't. I don't even like pointing a plastic gun, an instructional aid at somebody. It gets so ingrained in you that you should not be pointing at somebody, that if a kid gets that, then they will not have those kind of accidental things. So at any rate, so I'm thinking that this, Wee One Tactical might be a good first gun for my granddaughter. I'll have to see. She'll be six. So let's see. LAPD chief. And this is something they're not talking about, but this ought to get their attention. Do you know that, I think we've all seen this bit where they say it looks like a third world country out in Los Angeles where there's this mixing yard where the trains stop and get switched to different trains and stuff, and people are breaking in and breaking open all the Amazon packages and the FedEx packages and, well, not FedEx because they use their own stuff, but, you know, all those packages and stuff like that are on trains, and then they steal the stuff out of them. Well, it turns out that there have been quite a few guns that have been stolen out of there. Uh-huh. Oh, now that'll get their attention. And before it was just that they were, oh, geez, this looks bad for Los Angeles. Well, now that they think guns are being stolen, now maybe that'll get their attention. Let's see. Attempt to repeal Virginia gun control dies in the state Senate. Well, this is kind of interesting. We all thought, you know, what's his name, Governor Youngkin of Virginia, and is it Winsome Sears, the lieutenant governor and stuff? They remember Virginia had Governor Northam. That's what it was, Ralph Northam. And he was this super anti-gun guy that went in, and he did all the anti-gun laws and stuff like that. Well, here comes the new governor, and he's a GOP guy, and he's a Second Amendment guy. And you know what? He's trying to repeal all these things, and what's happening? He's getting stopped because the Senate is still controlled by Democrats. They have a one-vote majority in the state Senate. Now, I got to believe that there are some other you know, they call them blue dog Democrats, like Manchin. Is he from Virginia or West Virginia? But he actually is a guy who represents his people, represents the constituents, not the people that are the woke group that are Washington, D.C. and stuff like that. So there's got to be some more Democrats that they can get one or two to switch over, or at least, maybe they'll miss the vote that day or something like that so that the GOP can win. But the point is that it's not just the people on top. It's not just the president of the United States. It's the Senate and the House as well. And you've got to control everything if you're going to make proper inroads back and restore some of the freedoms that we got. So we've got to make sure we do that. And, you know, it's just like here. We have a Republican majority in Michigan, but what happens? We got a Democrat governor that vetoes everything. So you can't, you know, don't even think about constitutional carry while you've got a governor that'll veto it. This is happening all over the country with Alabama, Georgia, all those places where the legislature votes to, House bills and Senate bills that are going to support constitutional carry, but the Democrat governors will veto it. So you've got to have a majority in the legislature. You've got to have a majority at the executive branch, the governor as well. So, okay. Let's see. Here's another. This is a story that makes me laugh. And this shows the ideas of people about and laws, okay? Louisville moves to ban celebratory gunfire, okay? Even though when politicians claim this isn't about the Second Amendment, they're usually lying through their teeth. In this case, Louisville officials may actually be taking a step that even most gun owners would call common sense. At least in theory. Three Democrats on the Metro Council are proposing a local ordinance that would make it unlawful to discharge a fire inside the city limits. Instead of a misdemeanor offense, it would be punishable by a year in jail. The ordinance, as introduced, specifically states that legally defending people, that's okay, you know, you won't get charged with it if you're having a defensive gun shoot, or if you're in a properly zoned indoor range or outdoor facility that's permitted and inspected by the city. Okay, gun ranges are well regulated, okay? But instead, the city council says their goal is to cut down on the large number of shots fired into the air during holidays. Well, I got to say, it is likely, again, not anybody who's listening to this radio show or any other gun show, because we don't shoot into the air. They said that during the past New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, Louisville's 911 center received 325 calls for shots fired. Now, maybe some of them might have been gang activity or something. I don't know. But 6% of all the calls for 2021 happened on New Year's Eve. So you got a lot of guys going out, yee-haw, we're going to go out and shoot into the air. And you got to realize what goes up must come down. So I like it that they're going to maybe a campaign to remind people about that. But again, you're barking up the wrong tree, because gun people, and by the way, making a law, I got to bet that most of the people who are shooting into the air at midnight on New Year's Eve already know that they're not supposed to do that. You know, maybe, oh, well, let's have a law, and it'll have $500 fine and a year in jail, okay? Well, wait a minute. They don't even give a $500 fine and a year in jail for guys that they're catching with illegal guns on the street or gang activity. So you're going to shoot. You're gonna put somebody in jail for a year because they shot in the air? They probably know there's no teeth to this law. It really just needs to be common sense and gun safety. So, oh, gosh, let's see. Another one here. Judge says the Rittenhouse rifle will be destroyed by crime by the crime lab. That's the AR. Remember Kyle Rittenhouse with the shootings in the at the riots in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and actually, apparently, he has Kyle Rittenhouse doesn't want the gun back, and he wants it to be destroyed and throw away the rest of his items because he doesn't want them to be used as a political symbol, meaning somebody going anti-gun on it, also, or a trophy celebrating the shootings. So I got to say, as much as I think that, I mean, that's all for show, but the point is that, you know, it's like I'm looking at this picture where the prosecuting attorney actually was sitting there and he was pointing that AR-15 at the jury members and stuff. You don't, and he was just trying to make a political statement. We got Theron on the phone. Hi, Theron. How are you today?
Hey, good. I got to say, I'm over here firing my gun into the air. I hear you, and now I can't do it anymore. WTF, man. Now, I got to tell you, that really cuts back Steppenwolf and, you know, fire all your guns into space, explode into space, or all your guns at once. The reason I called is I want to underscore something. I just finished an article, about maybe 8 pages, written by a man who was actually, he's Bosnian, and he went through the Clinton years, shall we say. What was it, 92 through 96, when the whole Soviet bloc came apart?
Yep.
And everybody was shooting everybody to death. And he went through his entire story. It is horrific. People have no idea what's coming if it hits the fan, meaning, you know, there's no electricity, no police, no nothing, gangs rule. And he went through it in excruciating detail, but the overarching theme in this, and he really nails it at the end, is, and I can't stress this more importantly, and I know you do too, is you must have firearms and ammunition. You must.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said for every gun he has 4,000 rounds of ammunition. He'll never have less.
That sounds about, well, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Well, he said also, there are various scenarios. If you choose the scenario, and many did, that you're going to be a marauder, you're going to steal what you need, you're not worried about stocking anything up, he said you need even more ammunition and more guns. And the one thing he pointed out, which people never really think, is very shortly into anything that actually takes place, like, you know, they're talking about Russia's going into Ukraine right now, so the poor Ukrainians, at some point in areas, there will be no doors, no windows, no heat, no electricity. And he said that's how you end up living. And he said even when you're out on the street trying to trade for things, and he said antibiotics are crucial. If you can get them to stockpile them, do it.
Right.
He pointed out that snipers are everywhere, just randomly shooting people, you know. And of course they chose sides over there. Much of it was Muslim against Christian. But, you know, you're not safe anywhere. But again, guns, ammunition, guns. Gold, yeah, so what? You want lead in a delivery system.
Well, that's right. I have most of my precious metals in brass, copper, and lead, so.
Absolutely. Anyway, that was all I wanted to pass on. This piece was chilling. It was up on, a friend of mine sent it to me on Facebook. Again, the guy was there. He's still alive today. Very few are still alive today.
You know, you know, I want to say, I talked earlier, I don't know if you're doing your workout and you heard, but there were like 5.4 million new first-time gun owners in 2021.
Right.
And
this is good news.
And it's good because people are, and again, the other thing is, and I don't know if you heard it, but the anti-gunners not only hate the fact that there are more people buying guns, but it is a more diverse crowd buying guns now.
Right.
And so the thing is, the thing to the time to do it is ahead of time, not when the you know what hits the fan.
Almost. Right.
And at that time there will be no guns and no ammo and no primers and things like that for hand loading. You've got to have that stockpile ahead of time.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Real quick on another note, I don't know if I think I told you I have just battled down the Omicron variant I'm hoping that's what it was. I never got tested. I'm supposed to get tested on Tuesday.
Oh.
But I'm over it. But I was back in the studio for the first time yesterday live. But I got to tell you, dude, I thought, you know, please make this the case, Jesus. Hit me with Omicron. I want the extra antibodies.
That's right.
Now I think I've got them now.
Now you are supercharged, right, for your amenity. Or what is I'm thinking? Your immune system is supercharged now.
Let's hope. All right. Okay. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Okay.
See you later.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Theron. See you. Bye. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk here at WHAM Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
WHAM Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and we have got Gary from Tucson, Arizona, on the line about Kyle Rittenhouse's gun. Hi, Gary. What's your thoughts?
Hey, Dick. Good to talk to you. Initially this morning, when I heard that they were going to destroy the gun, I was kind of upset about it because it seemed to me ridiculous to destroy a gun like that. But hearing that it was Kyle's idea and his rationalization for it, I support it. There's a definite market for famous guns out there. And if he personally doesn't want that gun to be used as symbolism, then more power to him.
Yeah, you know, I could imagine, and there are people who collect, you know, guns from famous individuals, or typically they may or may not be crime guns, but they may just be, you know, Charlton Heston's gun or John Wayne's gun or something like that. But right. the point about I would imagine that if you had this gun in the wrong person's hand, that it could become a symbol of something that we would not be happy with, right? So,
right, yes, and. You were talking about the increase of gun sales, which has been going on now for like 5 or 8 years now.
Oh,
it's just been soaring. And it's a double-edged sword because it's great that people are getting their guns because they're going to need them, but it's rotten that they're going to need them. See,
yeah,
we really don't want to have to defend ourselves against our federal government, but if that's what we have to do, that's what people are getting ready for. And Theron was just talking about, he was talking about the effects of an EMP burst. That's a very likely thing. And if you don't have armament, and you don't have food, you don't have water, you're just going to be a statistic, which is 90% of the people in the country, if the EMP lasts for a year, don't live.
I know. There's and matter of fact, Theron and I have read a dozen series, the apocalyptic kind of series, you know, like 1 second after and one year after. You read all, have you read any of those?
I've read multiple end of the world scenario.
Yeah.
Books, yes.
Yeah. The Coming Home series or Going Home series and all that kind of stuff. And it is horrific what would happen to the masses who are not prepared in any way, whether it's with you know, food, water, shelter, but mainly the way to defend yourself. And I do think that most of these gun sales, the 5.4 million in 2021, the 15 million the year before, or no, 8 million. Those actually, we had 20 some million sold. It's just the 5.4 million are first time gun buyers, right? And
yes.
And the thing is that the majority of them are probably the first time gun buyers are definitely people looking for self defense. And they're not thinking necessarily self defense against. Against
marauding hordes,
or against the government, but just in they've seen what has happened with the law enforcement communities, where these, you know, in big cities, they're cutting back on it. By the way, they're almost all turning around and coming back and going, well, we kind of, well, let's walk this back a little bit. We actually need more cops, not less, that kind of thing.
Well, sure, you can't ignore the murder rates across the country in all these big Democrat leftist cities. I mean, this is worse than any year during Afghanistan, if you add them all up together.
Yeah.
You know, and this is in a peaceful country, not at war with itself.
Yeah.
And we're just slaughtering ourselves. You're right about that. And people have to protect themselves because our government has failed us again and not doing their primary job, which is to protect the citizens of the country.
That's right. That's right. And actually, I saw, I forget the name of it. It's kind of a real, he's a real leftist. I didn't cut it out because I don't normally talk about things like this. But it was one of these guys that is on a comedy series or something. He's a super leftist actor. And he actually just yesterday posted, I can't believe what I saw with my own eyes. It wasn't a CVS. It was like a Walgreens or something like that. This store got robbed right in front of me. I stood there and took movies of it. The guy walks in. He just loads up his bag and walks past the, quote, security guard.
Yeah.
And he goes, I can't believe it. Well, now, you know, and he was one of these guys that had talked about, oh, well, that's just living in a big city. But when it happens to them, suddenly, you know, they always say a liberal is a conservative who just hasn't been mugged yet, right? And
yes.
And the thing is that so many of these people that were out there in these woke videos and things like that, suddenly when it starts approaching their neighborhoods and their well-being, suddenly they're changing their story about law enforcement. So
certainly, yeah, it's very easy to be aloof and engaged in something that's happening in New York or Chicago, but when it hits your home, your family, your neighborhood, yeah, you tend to make a change if you can.
Yeah.
But we're talking about leftists too. What they want is to destroy and cause the chaos, to take advantage of it, never let a crisis go to waste, so they can turn us into a Marxist state.
Yeah.
So we have all those forces to fight. Now,
we're
going way off gun.
Oh, I know. Today. But so tell me, how did you find Trigger Talk out in Tucson, Arizona?
I've got the iHeart radio app.
Ah, and so you listen to Theron, too?
Yeah, I listen to everybody.
Ah, great. Great.
No doubt about it. It's a great station. I've obviously been listening to it for a long time. I'm not going to stop now, considering I can listen to it anytime I want.
I know. Isn't that? And did you know, I don't know if you found them, but did you know that on TriggerTalkRadio.com I've got my podcast going back for 10 years?
I do not, sir, but I'm quite sure I will not be listening to 10 years of your podcast.
You won't be. No. Well, they're actually, I have gone back occasionally and listened to one from 8 years ago or something like that. And unfortunately, we're talking about the same kind of things that we're talking now with the leftists, the Democrats, the anti-gunners, the gun ban folks, all that kind of stuff.
No doubt.
I really get tired of the same battle going on and on and on. And the thing is that we have to fight it, because the anti-gunners never give up, and it's never enough for them. If you said, okay, we give in, you can't have mags that have more than 15 rounds in them in an AR or more than 10 rounds in a pistol, they'll go, well, that's fine for now, but we want it to be only seven
three.
Rounds or three,
yeah.
or single
the
shots.
The magic number, yeah.
Yeah, there
that's
is no magic number.
Yeah, they're out of their minds because yeah. So we're free and we can do what we want, when we want, and how we want, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. That's
yeah.
the general rule.
Yeah.
And that's what the penal code is supposed to represent, you know, the fact that we can't hurt other people. You take it
yeah.
easy, Dick.
Yep.
Have a good weekend.
Well, thank you for
bye-bye.
Calling today. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Well, good. See, how about that? Boy, the Wham signal really reaches far all the way out. Well, no, he listens on the internet, either streaming or... Now, he could listen to some of my podcasts. They're kind of fun, but if you like the show, you'll like the podcast. I did want to mention, I use a thing called WordPress, and Bluehost. Now, Bluehost is my my servers and stuff like that that I load the program onto, and my podcasts. Well, WordPress just did another major overhaul of their software, okay? And so it didn't change the look of the website or the way, or I want to say, or the ability for you to go in and pull down the podcasts in either an MP3 file or a MP4, which is an iPod kind of file. It does, however, affect the way I have to put them up. Okay, and I do this myself. We don't have a vast staff of IT folks here. The closest we've got is our Swiss Army knife of Wham Radio, which is Derek, who's looking at me over here. But he does all the broadcast stuff here, but not the stuff that has to do with putting up my podcast. Derek, do you do Theron's show? Do you put those things up, or does he do them?
He posts his own programs to his website.
Okay. So see, we pretty much are a do-it-yourself kind of operation here. And I'm doing it just fine until they throw a wrench into works and change it all on me. So the last 2 weeks, I've struggled a little bit because I haven't got the rhythm down yet. There's something, and I'll go along and I'll be putting up the file, and I'll look and I'll go, oh, there it is. And I'll click on the link and I can, and then the next time I'll go, well, where is that link? I can't find it. So be patient with me. If something's wrong and you don't seem to be able to download them, or if you don't see them, I usually try to put them up Saturday night. But send me an email, dick@triggertalkradio.com, and I do try to get back to, you know, most people. I do have a list of people that I save your emails, and there's some, oh gosh, there's a guy that wanted to talk about Savage 99 gunsmithing and Crossman 600 pellet guns, and I haven't got back to you yet because I don't have an answer on those, some of those things, but I do read them all. And many of you, when they're something that I know offhand, I'm able to just answer right away. So I read all of them. I enjoy all of them. Be patient with me if you're trying to pull down something, and in the last couple of weeks, it's looked slightly different, okay? Let's see. Now, I was looking at some stories about new handguns that are coming out in 2022. And I want to say, it's interesting because the basic design of most handguns, with some exceptions, okay, occasionally we'll get something really cool like that new Kel-Tec PMR-50 or the 5.7s or the, let's see, the Ruger 57 or something like that that's kind of unusual and neat. But for the most part, a 1911 is a 1911, okay? But they keep coming out with ones, and the thing that's important is that they are getting better. They are being made better. I want to say I remember some guns from back in the 70s, and they were from the 60s and stuff like that. That were crappy guns. Okay, can I say crappy, Derek? Yeah, he says I can say crappy. It's the S word I can't say. That's the one that I can't say. But the crappy guns. And, you know, they're like the Lorink and the Raven and, you know, some of these little pot metal 25 automatics and stuff. Even the guns that used to be really poo-pooed and looked down upon, things like the High Points and stuff, they're making those pretty decent nowadays, okay? And they are reasonable. And I got to say, I know that, like, they came out with some pistol caliber carbines, and I know Theron's got one. He loves it. It's a High Point 9mm, as I recall. And he loves it, okay? Totally reliable. So you what's happening is we're seeing a lot of guns imported coming from companies that we haven't heard of before. You do have to be a little careful because you know that if you're going to get something from Ruger or Smith & Wesson or Beretta or Sig Sauer or something like that, that they're going to be around for a while. And if there's a problem with it, you likely will get it fixed, or you can get parts for it. I once got a part for a I actually had to send it in, Ruger Single Six that was 40 years old, and no charge to fix it. And so I want to say, so when you look at some of these new guns, you have to kind of weigh it, but I want to say there's one, oh gosh, they look like, and some of them are interesting because they look like a 1911, but they actually have polymer frames. That's interesting. That makes them pretty lightweight. And they are reasonably priced. Okay, there's an American Tactical FX-H45, Moxie it's called. But it's pretty neat. It's like and they make a short version as a Commander model too. And they're available in black, and they're available in flat dark earth, and the recommended sticker price is like $459, which means they'll probably go for like $399 or so. And so I want to say American Tactical is getting a decent reputation. And then there's a company that a lot of people see these things, and you always go, man, that would be a handful to shoot. But Bond Arms, the little Derringers, they flip open. It's got two barrels, one on top of the other. And they are a good backup gun, I want to say a decent deeper cover gun because they're so small. Okay, and they make them in things like 357 and 45 and stuff. They just came out with one. They call it a Roughneck series, and it's actually what they've done is, instead of being very highly polished and blued or highly polished and stainless steel, they have a like a Parkerized kind of finish on them. And they just came out with this Roughneck one in 380. And the idea is it's got like a 2.5-inch barrel on it. And it's got a sticker price of MSRP of $269, which probably means you'll see it for $199 out there. So, wow. They've got some things that are reliable and decent, and I've got to say, it's like the little North American Arms ones. I keep saying I'm going to get one in 22 mag. I haven't yet, but I'll find one someday. What happens, I don't normally plan gun purchases. They find me, okay? I'll find one at a gun sale, you're on Gun Collector Show or up at Mason at the gun shows, and you'll find something that just tickles you, okay? Or sometimes it's at your local gun store. You might go like down to Johnson's or something in Adrian, and they've got it in the, I have found guns down there that have been in the used cabinet. Now, I got to say, there are not as many lately. Maybe we'll get back to that again some point. Used to be there'd be a ton. Now there's not as many. And even used guns, just like used cars, go for more than what you might think they are. But I will find something and go, oh, I like that. And then the one thing you have to do kind of is, if you have an opportunity to get something and it's, you think it's reasonable and you want to get it, get it. Because if you wait a day, I've had that happen before too. I was down at Cabela's and saw a Remington Model 8, which is a rifle that is in a, I want to say it's a semi-automatic rifle, an early version of a, I think it's a version of a Remington 81, but it was in 300 Savage, and I thought, oh, man, does that look cool. I'd like to get that. Maybe I'll wait. Look down the barrel. It looks a little bit dull, and maybe, yeah, I'll think about it. So I go home, and then I call, and then I go, oh, I should have gotten it. So I call back, and boom, it was gone already. And actually, the guy said, oh, man, if you need to, just tell us. Now, I don't know if they're still doing this down there, but they would put it away for a couple of days for you. while you made a decision if you called. I don't know if they're still doing that. That was several years ago. Let's see. Now, on the other end of the gun scale here, again, as I mentioned, 1911s, I mean, you can get them from $400 for a Rock River, is it? No, what is it? Rock Island Armory or something, up through a couple grand for Wilson Combats and things like that. But here's a boutique 1911 manufacturer called Cabot Guns, C-A-B-O-T, Cabot Guns. And they have a new Apocalypse series. And, man, it's got everything on it. It's a Damascus finish on the barrel, which is, I want to say Damascus finishing, and actually Damascus knives and old shotgun barrels. That was kind of a different technology. They used to use like a wire form and they'd hammer it together. But it's got a Damascus finish on the slide. It's got an N9 or 45. It's got, you know, threaded barrels for suppressors and things like that. And it's got, you know, I want to say optics mount on it, a low mount optics mount, everything that you could want in one. There's a 12 to 18 month waiting period for made to order firearms. And they are starting at $74.95. Yeah, that's not $74.95. That's $7,495. Dollars, and that's not just the MSRP. They start at that, okay? So, yeah, you can find some really nice guns out there. I don't know who buys those. I can't afford those, okay? Now, matter of fact, although we're almost out of time for this week, but if you are one of these guys that has and remember, we don't give your last names. Call in and tell me. If you've got one of these Wilson Combats for $3,500 or a Cabot for $7,500 or something like that, I'd like to know a little bit about your thought process. It's probably just like people that that appreciate fine cars, okay? Yeah, you can drive in my generation, we always said a Yugo, okay? You could drive a Yugo and get to the store, okay? Or you can get there in style in a Ferrari 512, okay? So same transportation, but in a different manner. Same thing for a 1911. You can go from $400 to $7,500, probably more. There's probably even more. Let's see. CZ makes good pistols. There's a new one, a CZ P10F, that is pretty cool. H&K just came out with a 22 caliber pistol that looks like an MP5. And I want to say I kind of like those things. I've got one that looks like an Uzi. It's actually made by Walter, and it's labeled as an Uzi it's in 22. So you can find a lot of cool things. Mossberg MC2 SC. Mossberg is making pistols now. You may not know that. They have an outstanding company. They stand behind their products, and I think that you could go confidently with Mossberg MC2 SC. These are some of the new ones. Rock River Arms does a lot of imports, okay? So they have some new ones that use, like, Glock. They use Glock mags and stuff, so they're designed to be like Glocks. SAR USA is actually called Sarsilamaz, or they call it just SAR USA. They come from Turkey. There is a thriving gun community and gun manufacturers community in Turkey. So lots of cool things that you can do. The SCCY, the Sky Firearms, are actually a reasonable, decent choice out there. And actually a big trend is Springfield Armory has just come out with their XDS Elite, but in 10 millimeter. Oh my gosh, would that be a handful? I might have to think about one of those. I like a gun that I can feel the recoil. Okay? So I want to say there's that. Also, Taurus has a great amount of revolvers and a new one in .327 Federal. Anyway, we'll talk more about that next week. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.